Welcome to Acts of Kitchen, the fortnightly podcast of food and cooking stories. My name's Alex, and this fortnight I got two new cooking things to play with. Both of these were inspired by a cookbook I got to review that I actually can't tell you about yet because it's embargoed until mid-May, and it's not May until tomorrow. But it includes recipes for both waffles and donuts. Now, I've never deep fried anything in my life and I don't intend to start, but the donut recipe is one for baked donuts. I had no idea you could bake donuts instead of frying them, so I'm really excited by this idea. And courtesy of friend of the podcast, Elisa, who you might have heard interviewed a couple of times in the past, I even have a donut pan waiting to be used. That's going to happen this week, and I look forward to relating the results. As for the waffles, waffles are something I've never really had. I've eaten them before, occasionally in a cafe, but they're not at the top of my list of things that I love or go to out of my way for. But the idea of owning a waffle-making thing was intriguing, and thanks to my husband, I now have one. It's a stovetop one because we were wondering whether it would work camping, but it's got plastic handles, so I don't think that'll be great with the fire, and it needs a fairly even heat, so we're thinking no for camping. However, for at-home cooking, I think it's going to be great. We made waffles the other night using the classic recipe that the waffle maker came with, which included 4 eggs and beating the whites separately and those sorts of things. We had a couple of waffles each that were savoury with cheese and salami on top, and then the other half of the mixture we cooked and ate as dessert. I tried one with maple syrup, of course, and that was okay, but the other one I had was with an amazing jam from Kate, the jam sorceress. This one was plum and fennel seed and chocolate, and it was absolutely incredible. The waffles came out nice and fluffy, and I'm really looking forward to experimenting with more waffle recipes, including ones with sour cream and ones with yeast and ones with chocolate. And that's just the recipes that the maker itself came with. This last month or so, I've been reviewing 2 books that come out in May. I'll be talking about the appearance and utility of the books themselves, as well as the recipes. Here's a bit of a spoiler. I didn't really love one of them. Actually, I didn't love either of them, but for one of them, that's very much because of me and my style of cooking, not the book itself. With the other one, I think it's the book's problem. A couple of weeks ago, I announced my Patreon for this podcast, and thanks again to those of you who've signed up. I really appreciate it. Now, some of you will know that I also do another podcast called Galactic Suburbia with my good friends Elisa and Tansy, where we talk about all things science fiction and fantasy. As part of that Patreon, we've set up a Slack, and anyone who supports this podcast also gets access to that. Slack is, well, I guess it's a bit like maybe a moderated Twitter, or better, an old school chat room, but good. I'll be sending out invites to those of you who are patrons already, and you'll get to opt in if you'd like access. We've got channels for talking about food and cooking, of course, and about science fiction things, as well as other channels like craft and gardening because of the different podcasts the three of us are into. I think it's going to be a fun way to engage with all of you guys and with other people who are interested in similar things. On to this fortnight's interview. This time it's with 2 people, Cheryl and Beck. Separately, they run their own businesses, one centred on the joy of tea and the other in catering. Together, they've put together some amazing events combining different sorts of tea with matched food. I hope you enjoy this interview. Cheryl and Beck, thank you so much for joining me on Skype tonight.
No worries. Nice to be joining you.
I came across you, Cheryl, first by going to one of your tea events, and I've also been to one of your combined events, the tea and brunch event a few months ago, which I enjoyed enormously. So firstly, thank you for running those events. So Cheryl, I wanted to start by asking you about Flag and Spear, which is your business. I wanted to start by asking about the name because I think it's, well, it's really intriguing and I wanted to know where it comes from.
Yeah, so Flag and Spear I actually came across that name in a book that translated some ancient Chinese texts on tea. So some poetry and some, you know, things that were written around 700 AD by the first people who sort of were really into tea. And I came across this phrase that said, the bud and the first leaf of the tea plant is called the flag on spear point. So Chinese language is extremely poetic and descriptive. So it's really just that imagery. And if you imagine it in your head, it looks like a flag on a spear. And when I thought about what I wanted to do with my business, it was really, you know, my primary goal is to make tea really accessible and interesting, and I guess strip away preconceived ideas of what it is and what it can be, because there's a lot of cultural things that come with it, whether you're British or Indian or Chinese or Japanese. And I think for Australian market, I just wanted to strip that back and just say, hey, tea can be something different as well. You know, it can be what you want it to be. So I sort of wanted to take away any preconceived ideas. Like if you use the words like teapot or teacup or those kind of things, people will have different ideas. Whereas with flag and spear, it has no real direct links. It doesn't make people think of tea straight away. But the origin of it is actually the tea plant. So it goes back to what tea actually is, which is, you know, the plant itself. So that's sort of what I was going for when I came across that name, and it just really resonated with me. So I just really love that imagery, and, you know, and being Chinese myself, that was how I actually fell in love with tea, is through my heritage and my culture. So I like that it references sort of everything in just two or three words.
Yeah, that's really neat. So you get something that's kind of devoid of that tea baggage in English, at least, but then, as you say, has this enormous resonance with tea and tea culture and history. So that's quite a fortuitous discovery in the book in that case.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask too, Cheryl, I mean, obviously you're very passionate about tea as a commodity and as an experience. How did you get into that in the first place?
Well, again, being Chinese, I sort of grew up with it. So, you know, I have very early memories of my dad and my uncle sitting around drinking tea for hours. I mean, in Chinese culture, tea is quite a masculine thing. And, you know, so I had those memories from very early on. And I visited China for the first time when I was around 17. Mm-hmm. And it's really cliched and everything, but, you know, I had an experience on a mountaintop. So I was actually in Yunnan, which is the birthplace of tea, and just had this amazing experience with tea there. And, you know, it just developed into a passion from there on.
What led you to turning it into a business?
Several years ago, I talked about it a lot, and I had a lot of tea sets and, you know, paraphernalia. And so a lot of my friends started asking me to teach them about tea. Coming from, I guess, an academic background, I have quite a strong sense of duty or integrity when it comes to teaching, because I think, you know, it's not just what I think, it's actually what's facts and what's the truth. So I went and bought all these books on tea and started studying, because I thought, if I'm going to be teaching people, I want to know exactly what I'm saying is right, or, you know, is according to, you know, what the experts think. So, yeah, once I started studying and learning about it, it just started to snowball. And so I started doing these little classes for my friends at the beginning, and then more and more people were interested. And, yeah, I just found myself in a situation where there was all these different tea-related opportunities coming up to me. And I felt that if I didn't consolidate that into a business, it would all just be a bunch of different things I did, as opposed to building up to something. Yeah, so essentially my tea business, I started my tea business just to, I guess, to build that momentum of what was happening around all that, yeah, teaching and all those events and all those different, yeah, little things that were happening.
It's very exciting to be able to make a living out of something you're obviously so passionate about.
Well, to be honest, I don't. So I'm an engineer by trade. Flag and spear is my side business. During the day, I'm an engineer.
Beck, you run a company as well in the art of entertaining. Can you tell me how that got started?
Yeah, so that got started actually a few years before even Flag and Spear, probably. came about. So I'm an optometrist by trade, and that's what I do in the day. And in the weekend, I will do catering if need be. So I've always loved food, and I kind of wanted a bit of a break, I think, from optometry. I think I wanted to – I have kind of a scientific side, but I also have quite a creative side, and I guess I wanted to – I was a bit sick of the science, so I wanted to have a bit of a play. And I tried to go to culinary school in the States, and that didn't work out. I didn't get my visa that I needed, and so I was a bit disappointed by that. And so I just thought, you know, I just started, you know, having dinner parties when I moved to Melbourne, and a good way to get to know people, because I moved down from New Zealand, actually. Started having dinners, and then people started knowing me for having my dinners. And then one day someone asked me, would you cater my wedding? Heck. Your wedding? I was like, I have to think about it. So I went away and I thought about it, and I was like, you know, because I'm basically self-taught. I, you know, haven't done any formal training. And I thought, you know, why not? Let's give it a whirl. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to cater, I think even before I catered the first wedding, then someone said knew that I'd said yes to that. So then I already had a few other jobs, like, booked in. And so I thought, well, I might as well start a business, because obviously you need, like, trade accounts and all of that kind of stuff to get things at good prices. So I just started it up. Yeah, I guess the name for me is, like, if you see it very closely, obviously there's an art to entertaining, and that's what I love to do. But if you see it very closely written, it actually, the word heart stands out. Mm. So, you know, for me, like, I do it because I love it, and I, you know, love seeing people very content after a good meal. So I guess, you know, it's the heart of entertaining. So it is an art, but there's definitely a heart behind. Yeah, so that's how it came about for me. So a passion that just, I got asked, and so then it just went from one to another.
You've been following the snowball turning into an avalanche, it seems. Do you have a preferred style of food, or do you prefer savoury or sweet, or do you like experimenting with everything?
I like a bit of everything. Yeah, I like a bit of everything, as long as it looks beautiful. I never want to serve anything that doesn't look nice.
Yeah, so the aesthetic side's important as well.
That is extremely important. So I really like finger food and all of that you can make extremely pretty. But I spend most of my time now doing tea. Tea and food matching is basically 80% of what I do now.
I was going to ask, with the different events that you run through Imbue, how hard is it back to match food and tea? Because, I mean, obviously from an English background, your mind automatically goes to high teas, but it's never been obvious to me that, you know, your classic salmon or cucumber sandwiches actually matches tea.
No. So, well, I don't think it really does.
No.
That probably we should start with maybe how even Imbue came about. So obviously Shirley and I have been friends for a while, and she had a birthday party and I catered it. And so, you know, she knew that I could do the stuff, and I did this fancy party for her.
Well, the main thing for me was that we had creative synergy, so we worked really well together. So we had this theme, the Orient Express, and Beck ended up doing a dish for every stop on the original journey of that train, the Orient Express trip.
From Turkey to Paris. I did a course from the country, which took me forever, but she was my friend, so I thought, I'll do that for her. We worked well together.
Yeah.
And then cheekily one day, Cheryl, you can tell you this part.
So I studied my tea master in a certification in 2015, and one of the assignments that we had to do was to do a afternoon tea menu. I'm more of a savory person than a sweet person, so I don't really love high tea because it's just too many sweets and not enough savory. So I decided I was going to do something different for my menu. And, you know, I sort of cheekily asked Beck to come over and basically
do it for her.
Do my homework, yeah. So, you know, I had all the teas set up that I thought would go really well. And we sat there for, 3 or 4 hours, you know, tasting each tea, writing out notes, and then just imagining what dishes that we thought would go well with it. And yeah, we, you know, at the end of that session, we sort of looked at it and just really, really wanted to make it. And well, for me, I really wanted to eat it. So, so Beck said to me, if you can find a venue, I will make this menu. And so I spent 6 weeks finding a venue and we put it on. And, you know, 2 days after that event, we sat down for a debrief and we're like, when's the next one? So,
yeah, so it kind of started from one that we didn't really know where it would go from there. It was just, you know, fun. I think the first one, there was a lot of, you know, people that knew us. I think Broadsheet took it on and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, I spent hours upon hours trying to perfect those dishes because I was, like, really stabbing in the dark in a way because you don't really think of tea and food going, you know. I'd never been to a tea and food thing. You know, I often think that wine and food, I'm just like, they don't even match. They just say they do. and so for me, I really wanted them to match. I really wanted the tea and the food to come together and be better together than individually. And so I just spent hours upon hours finicking, trying several versions of every different thing that I came up with. It took me forever. I'm not as slow as that now. I'm a lot faster.
I mean, at this, you know, we will think about things like the temperature of the tea. You know, too cold is sometimes not great. Room temperature, body temperature. Yeah. We'll talk about the plating. You know, there was much where we're like, nope, the ganache can't go on the top. It has to go on the bottom because if you get too much ganache, it ruins the pairing. And so I guess because tea and food pairing is not a common thing, no one's really doing it. And so it's almost like you really have to convince people that this is actually
legitimate
and it really works. So, you know, we're very, very particular about every detail because we're like, you know, we know it works. We want everyone to know, to experience it as well. Yeah.
Mm. I noticed that one of the events you've got coming up is a tea and cheese pairing, which if anything doesn't seem like it should automatically work, it's cheese. I mean, I trust you. I've been to your events. But how's that going? How are you preparing for that? Has it been more straightforward than I think or has it been a challenge?
I would say we kind of know what works and doesn't work now, I think, in terms of, like, tasting teas. So I kind of say to Cheryl, right, find the teas that you want to work with, then let's just sit down. Let's get a whole stack of cheese. And basically we eat cheese and drink tea
for hours.
Feel really unwell after doing that. And then just, so all she needs to do is give me the cheese and then I will come up with something with that cheese.
Mm.
And then I just, and then basically I go away, figure it out, and then she comes, basically eats.
Yeah,
the dish
and so make tea
and makes the tea, and just we just perfect it that way. So we've got a much more kind of rhythmic. That's how we kind of do it each time now.
Yeah.
So we cut the tea, come up with the flavors. I come up with the dishes. She tries it, cups the tea, come up with the presentation. Done. It does. It's not quite as straightforward as that, but yes, you eat a lot of food, and I generally don't feel very well after it because I probably shouldn't eat cheese that much. So cooking with, you know, 9 courses of cheese.
But, I mean, the session, so Beck mentioned that we cup the tea. Cup is just, when we say cupping tea, it's just, I guess, an industry term that they use for, you know, tasting the tea.
Mm-hmm.
So when we did our initial cupping session, we did, so we always start with the tea and we make a selection and then we make the dishes after that. And so we started off. We on that day we cupped 28 teas.
Goodness me.
And we narrowed the selection to 10. Yeah, and actually by the end of that one session we had already written out our menu.
Our rough menu.
A rough menu, you know, you tweak it along the way, but, you know, in a general idea of what we were going to serve.
Because the teas have to have an order in a way. You can't just go heavy and then, you know, light in the middle, then heavy. Like, Cheryl always thinks about the order. And we never have any, because teas, obviously Cheryl likes pretty much any tea. whereas I probably don't. And so if I don't like it, then we don't serve the tea. So it's at least my palate is probably more like the most people would like, and so we probably go off that.
Yeah. I mean, I like a lot of teas that are sort of acquired tastes.
Yeah.
So if you sort of serve them to people who aren't used to it, they probably wouldn't enjoy it. So, yeah, we do tend to go, if Beck's like, no way, then no, we don't serve it.
It sounds like a very effective working relationship in that case. What sort of plans do you have for Imbue? Are there pairings of tea and different sorts of food that you'd like to try into the future, or what are your ambitions for Imbue?
So after Cheese Edition, we have one more lined up, which is Teas of the World. So we're doing tea from, I believe, 8 different countries, 7 or 8, we haven't decided yet. And then we're matching those teas to classic dishes from that region.
Which is very difficult.
Very difficult, yeah. I mean, can you imagine one? I mean, when we do our events, we think a lot about flow, and like Beck said, you know, you can't start with a heavy and then have a light. So same with the food, it has to have a rhythm and a flow. So, yeah, that will be pretty challenging. Mm-hmm. Beyond that,
we're retiring from public events.
Yes.
Because we've done quite a few now. Yeah. I don't know what you've seen that we've done, but cocktail one, and then we did a dessert edition. Then we did a roast edition, and the breakfast edition, and then we just recently did a summer edition, and we've got the cheese edition, and then we've got the Teas and Food of the World. So I think both of us, you know, we do have full-time jobs and we do have personal lives, and I think for both of us it's not particularly sustainable. So this requires a lot more time. Probably to run an event will require a lot more time than for Cheryl to do an education class, or for me to even – probably cater a wedding. It's probably almost easier than doing this. And so it's not necessarily the most, you know, financial thing to do. It's something we do because we love it, not for money. It costs a lot to run those kind of things. And so I think we kind of are going to take, we'll still keep working together on another project after this, but not having public events. So it'll be available for the time for people that want to have private events as a you know, an offer.
So, I mean, you know, bespoke events for like bridal parties or birthday parties or things like that.
Yeah.
We're happy to do that.
Yeah, so not having to find a venue, not having to sell the ticket, not having to market it, you know, all of those things that these events aren't just about brewing tea and making food, because you have to think about all those other things as well.
That sounds like a very sensible decision to have made. Will you be keeping up your individual businesses? Cheryl, will you be keeping Flag and Spear going for the education side and so on?
Yes, for sure. I mean, Flag and Spear has always been about education, and if I'll be perfectly frank, even Imbue is almost a vehicle for me to do that as well. I mean, when else can you get 50 people in a room drinking 8 different teas that they've never heard of or thought of before in one sitting and sit around and listen to me talk about it? So, Imbue has always also been an education thing for me. Yeah, so Flag and Spear will continue on with other projects and that education side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you have grand ambitions for Flag and Spear, things you'd really like to achieve in the next few years?
I think I sort of take it as it comes. You know, it's really interesting being, I guess, the position I am in the tea industry at the moment and watching it emerge and grow. And, you know, it's hard to really predict where exactly it will go and where the demand will be. And I think just having a bit of flexibility to go along with it really helps. Like, for example, at the moment, tea and cheese is crazy. It's exploded, you know. A year ago, I walked into a cheese room and asked for a cheese that would go with a particular tea. And it was a French woman, and she was just like almost horrified. She says, I would never think of doing tea and cheese. Like, what is this? And, you know, in May, I'm doing a session with her. So, things have really changed. You know, there's a lot more interest in that area. So I think, it's just, you know, seeing what trends come out and just going along with it. But it's a really privileged position to be in, to be able to just, to be able to follow that.
That's great. And Beck, you'll continue to cater when need arises?
When need arises, yes. I'm a bit more picky these days. I do something as long as it interests me. I have certain standards. If someone wants a certain thing that doesn't really fit for me, I don't do it. So I'm quite picky, but I really like doing weddings. Probably my favourite.
Cheryl, my last question is for you, because I remember you talking a bit about teas you like at the Imbue event I went to. Is it possible for you to pick a favourite tea?
Really, I would say no. Yeah, it's just it really depends on the mood, the time of the day, the weather, what I've eaten, you know, that kind of thing. If you had to twist my arm and say you can only drink this tea for the rest of your life, I would probably pick some form of green tea, just because that's what I drink every morning and I kind of can't get started without green tea. But the most amazing teas I've ever had were all oolongs. So I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Fair enough.
From the French, you know, the one that you came to, the French toast one?
Yes.
That one is a winner.
Yep. On that note, thank you very much, both of you, for joining me.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening. You can send feedback to actsofkitchen@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review on iTunes to help other people find me, and check out my Patreon page too. Happy cooking.